consider that you've got to be active and you've got to be, you can't oppose, but you can certainly press and assert that Clarington must be protected and proper studies be done. So this is a lot of work for Clarington, and you've got to be prepared. And I hope that councillors will also attend Regional Council on January 30th to show Clarington is concerned, Clarington cares.
One question through the chair. There was some controversy about whether all the dioxin and fuel work was coming from the incinerator or from other sources. Has that been resolved?
No, it hasn't. And we must keep in mind that dioxins and furans are not naturally occurring, and that one of the key major sources of dioxins and furans are incinerators. In fact, that is their Achilles heel. That is the problem with them. They actually are formed in the process when you burn garbage, and they're synthesized there during the process. So they're not in the original waste, but in the presence of chlorine and organics, and at certain temperatures, these form, and they are one of the most toxic substances known to man.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Short.
Thanks for your presentation. The AMESA cartridge, you say it was part of the condition of approval. So how's the region getting away with not having that data available for so long?
That is a good question. How are they getting away with it? Because the ministry should be, now they say that they're working with the ministry and that there's a work plan and that they've got an expert or experts, and we've repeatedly asked for, show us the work plan. Like, that should be public. It should be available to Clarington. It's not, and we don't know who's working on it and what the credentials of those people are. And you know, I gave a pamphlet to some of your staff about the AMESA cartridge. Like, it's a complete mystery to me how this device that works in other places can be such an issue here. These are devices that are certified by TÜV in Germany and an organization in the United Kingdom that does certifications. So these are known, they work, and we've got no answer. And they have varied widely from what the stack test results are. So put this all together. For me, it's a huge concerning mystery. You've got stack tests not coinciding with AMESA. You've got stack tests showing everything is okay. Like, the week after that dioxin and furans ambient air exceedance, the stack test was fine. You must, if you're thinking critically, you must question. And you have to remember the stack test was slightly modified after the exceedances. Is there a problem with the stack test? Like, that could be a possibility. Maybe the AMESA is not so far off. Like, it's just crazy. 3 years in, they're nowhere near to being ready with this, and we don't have the data, we don't have the work plan. So this is where Clarington has to say to the ministry, this is not acceptable. AMESA, it was one of continuous monitoring of dioxins and furans was encouraged in the A7. It's happening other places. What's the problem in Durham? This is what you have to really press on. One of the many things.
Thank you, Councillor. Anything further? Councillor Jones.
Thank you very much for all the information. And through the chair, so you're saying that, and I agree with you around, we need to consult with the public, we need to communicate this information. And how do you see as what types of information does the public need, and how is the best way to do that? How do you see that?
Okay. Well, you see, this kind of goes back to my first slide, where they've said that they need to, the region's long-term waste study has expired. They need to start a new one. That's good. But they've jumped to the conclusion that waste study is saying we've got to have more incineration without going back to the public and saying, what do you think? So they've jumped the gun, and they've jumped the gun when they've had really 3 years of pretty terrible record here and unresolved issues. So it seems reckless to me. And so it's undemocratic. Need to consult the public. Is that the road you really want to go down? Or are we going to do, I mean, the incinerator's there, continue with that, fix it up, get things better, and then let's look at some other waste strategies. Because our airshed's already very burdened, and Durham Region knew it, and the evidence is in the EA. And that's got to be looked at.
Thanks.
Okay, do we have anything further? Ms. Bracken, thank you. Appreciate the time presentation. I agree with the vast majority of what you say. To be fair to the local councillors, and it was not, I'm going to say, properly articulated in the motion, Ms. Januszkiewicz noted that they were not starting the EA but wanted to start the terms of reference, and it wasn't written that way, to be fair, but is that correct?
Well, yes, it says in there that they're going to commence the EA, but we've all been down this road before. Okay, once they start it, it's like a moving train.
Yeah, perfect. Fair enough. But just so that local council knew, and to be fair to all of us, that's not what the report said. On the Knox versus D. Squillenberry, it was explained to us number of years ago by an independent consultant that the industrial NOx levels of East Gwillimbury were significantly lower than Clarington's, but the overall NOx, if you looked at the overall airshed, the numbers were comparable, virtually the same. Do you recall that?
I can show you a slide from the EA that shows, you know, like when you're looking at Sarnia, Hamilton, Toronto, guess which one was the higher for NOx ambient?
Okay, so that'll
Clarington,
be, some, that'll be something to look at. Again, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. And our next delegate is Ms. Gasser. Ms. Gasser, welcome. Ms. Gasser, the timeline is 10 minutes. Normally,
I'll be able
you
to
go.
Breathe. This is a novelty for me. I don't get to breathe at the region.
Okay, but is 10 minutes going to suffice, or?
I hope so. I might even be done early. So since the advancer is the little arrow over here?
Up and down, yes.
Up and down, okay. So good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year. And first of all, congratulations on getting elected. And second, thanks for passing the motion on the 14th further to up and down.
I'm sorry, Ms. Gasser. Councillor Neal. Oh, the timing.
I was waiting for her to start.
Yeah.
Pass the thank you and the congratulations. I was on it.
Okay, so it's this arrow here that I'm pressing.
Right to the left of the keypad where there's four arrows, the up
right.
and down one.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. I've been pressing it and it's not.
Try the other way.
I'm not sure what you mean. Okay. Oh, so down. Okay. Okay, so to go on to my next slide, so thanks for the motion from last week. So the current incinerator capacity, EA 22.1, it says the maximum is 140,000 tons a year. In your environmental compliance approval, it clearly states again that it's the maximum capacity 140. So I'm kind of confused about the staff comment about this just being an administrative amendment. You clearly have it stated in the EA and ECA what the limit is. The Durham Solid Waste Study, it's a really important report. It's been an important report every year. It signals what the region's plans are and what their priorities are. I'm not going to repeat the recommendations because I'm hoping by now that you've had an opportunity to read them, but this, what staff are calling an admin amendment, it's a 14.3% increase in capacity they are seeking. I have to say that I will have to look up the EA because I don't remember the comment about it being built to be able to process 160. It's possible, but that was news to me. And in order to go to 250, that's a 78.5% increase over approved capacity. So this is not just an increase in capacity, but this is an increase in the pollution load to this airshed in particular. So Durham Council in January 2008 approved a 70% diversion rate. And this is a section in the EA that describes what the region's supposed to be doing to ensure that they continue with their diversion programs. In your host community agreement with Durham, there's a commitment to a comprehensive waste management strategy, and that Durham will continue to implement and support an aggressive waste diversion and recycling program to achieve and or exceed a 70% diversion rate for the entire region. Durham's diversion rate has flatlined, and there's more tonnage requiring disposal. So you've got a stagnant diversion rate, a very small budget for diversion programs, and for promotion and education, for outreach, for bylaw enforcement, and for their call center. So I sent you a presentation that Durham staff made last week at the COW meeting. If you look on the right bottom, 5% of their budget covers all those activities I just listed. That is a tiny fraction of a big budget. So this is from the annual report. Online it's called their 2017 annual diversion report. And you can see the garbage tonnage. It's not really increasing that dramatically. You know, when you take a look that Durham has capacity for 110 out of that 140, and they claim they are at 115 for 2017, just small improvements in diversion. And of course, we should be focusing on reduction. That should be our priority, would achieve a great deal. And there's the adjusted diversion rates over the last 5 years. And Durham's 2017 actual diversion rate prior to adjustment was 51%. So here's the solid waste tonnages from Cal 3. And if you take a look at Durham's overall plan, you know, Durham staff claimed in the report in a different part that they've been basically over capacity since they started processing waste at the incinerator. So, you know, I've asked myself a number of times and raised it, why are you going to start landfill mining projects at Blackstock and at Scott landfills without a real need to do so? There's been no justification in Cal 3 provided for their administrative increase or even for their major request to increase to 250,000. It's really impossible for the average citizen to know complete annual operating costs beyond the operating fee, including consulting, legal fees, monitoring and reporting costs, cost of bypass and unacceptable waste, and any annual reconciliation adjustments. And even though we're in 2019, I double-checked with staff last week because I had asked them a number of times, and the 2017 reconciliation is not complete. So from last year's solid waste study, so they're always looking 2 years back, they've got to go 2 years back to have complete data. Durham's disposal rate is actually more expensive than their diversion costs. And they are substantially higher to comparator municipalities in that report. Now, unfortunately, the same data, though it's been provided in past years, was not provided in Cal 03. And, you know, I've asked numerous questions. I've gotten, you know, some figures, but doesn't matter what figure Durham gives me, their disposal costs are higher than comparable municipalities. Now, how do these costs impact Clarington? Well, Durham's percentage of property tax dollars is pretty high. It's anywhere from 50 to 55%. It could even be higher this year. I don't really know what it will be for 2019. To date, all federal gas tax dollars have gone to pay for the capital costs of the incinerator and have not been available for other programs, other eligible programs, which are paid for by property tax dollars. Ontario ratepayers, including your residents, subsidize the incinerator's electricity output to the tune of 8 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, incinerator availability, I'm not sure that council is always, Durham Region Council is always paying attention to this, but it's a big cost issue. So we learned at the end of September when HDR, one of the region's consultants, produced a report at the request of council that from startup in February 2015 until just past the exceedance in May 2016, the availability of the boilers was 79.3% and 80%, respectively. In 2017, staff have indicated, and I don't have this in writing, that's verbally from a meeting, that availability was around 85%. Covanta's so-called guarantee is 90%. To my amazement, at the EFW Advisory Committee meeting that was held at the end of November, basically there's no penalty for not meeting that availability guarantee. As long as they push through the 140,000 tons, it doesn't matter that they don't meet 90% availability. But it matters to anyone who's paying for this is because when the boilers are unavailable, you have to bypass waste. And staff indicated at this meeting in 2017 that when the boilers were down, they had a lot of waste they had to bypass. When the boilers were up and working, they didn't have enough waste, so they had to ask York to put in more waste so that they would meet the contracted capacity. And all of this availability business, the bypass business, this results in huge dispute resolutions, processes with Covanta, and all that adds to costs. Now, Wendy touched on the ambient air. This is from the ambient air monitoring plan. So this is to be reviewed every 3 years. You really need to be on this. This matters to Clarington. All monitoring matters, but this is the one that may come up for some kind of discussion. And as I mentioned, this will be very important for Clarington to pay attention to. Now, in Cal 3, staff reference, I'm not going to read all this because it's in the report, staff reference the coming changes for the sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide standards, and they're saying that, you know, while they think they're going to meet the stack test and the SEMS, that it could cause exceedances at the ambient air monitoring stations. Well, I have to say that I'm going to have to do some calculation with Wendy to see if they're going to meet the SEMS, because for NOx, they're just barely below the limit as it is now. But this is, again, signaling, okay, that staff consider the ambient air a problem. So I'm not going to repeat what Wendy said about the voluntary stack test. You should know, though, that when staff...
Ms. Gasser, I'm going to interrupt you. Councillor Neal, motion for a two-minute thank you, seconded by Councillor Trail. All in support, carried. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So when Durham first floated the incinerator, staff had committed to 4 stack tests a year. They had committed to quarterly testing. It's in the preliminary business case. And then, you know, as the incinerator, there were delays in construction, everything got more expensive. Well, it's really easy to cut down on the monitoring, and that's where things went sideways, and all that was managed to be achieved was the additional one voluntary stack test a year to bring it to 2. Now, this is important because Durham, that incinerator has failed 2 of 6 stack tests. It failed the first 2, and you know, the second one in May 2016, that was the voluntary test. And, you know, to get to the AMESA and why the AMESA is so important, so the stack testing is twice a year. They actually have had upsets during stack testing. They stop the testing and then they restart when everything's going perfectly. But what the dioxin sampling system was intended to do was not just to compare with stack testing, but to give you sampling over time and to detect trends. So the two advisory committees, in my opinion, the way Durham staff operate them, they are pretty much useless, and they don't have to be. We have a Durham Council motion that the energy from waste...
Ms. Cass, we've got about 30 seconds left.
Yeah. Should have been, the Energy from Waste Advisory Committee should have been meeting four times a year. We have met once in each of the last couple of years. The committees are not prepared to provide timely advice to Works Committee, whom they are supposed to advise. I urge you to familiarize yourself with the host community agreement. It's a really important document. And there's major changes at the region, new regional chair, new CAO, back to the standing committee system. And to repeat, I hope you prepare yourselves to respond effectively as the region unveils their plans and at every opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gasser. Councilor Neal.
Ms. Gasser, through you, you make a, I think, a good point about what's been delivered to the EFW versus what's actually been combusted. And I do recall there was, as you pointed out, there was some discussion about whose dime that should be on in terms of, you know, if they couldn't actually burn the waste and it got bypassed, and it seems to me the region actually paid for that, and I didn't understand why. But do you actually have the numbers in terms of what was delivered and what was incinerated over in 2018?
I don't have any 2018 numbers. We just have, the only 2018 number I have is the estimate of waste volumes that's in the report. Okay, it's an estimate. So the way the region's numbers come out, they're coming out later than they used to. I remember back in the day, let's say up until 4 or 5 years ago, you would get the previous year's number by April or May. They used to produce what they called an annual report. And now they're only producing one report. I got it this year in November with 2017 numbers. But to get to the bypass waste and all those details, there's less and less information being provided to regional council, and they're asking for more and more money. And for instance, the reconciliation, any numbers that show those bypass waste details, how much they cost, who would have paid, that's all part of a confidential discussion that the public never gets to see. The last reconciliation that was completed, so that would have been 2016, I mean, you just get a total number to say, you know, this is what it cost. There's legal fees involved. So Durham Region would have had Covanta's numbers at the end of February 2018, and almost 11 months later, that is still not complete.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Think further? Councilor Zort.
Thank you, Linda. In terms of diversion, is there more the region of Durham could be doing, and can you give us a firsthand experience of your little trip to Markham last year?
I think there's an awful lot that Durham Region could be doing, and also a lot that would be very low cost. So the example you bring up of Markham has developed a textiles diversion program. This is not just reusable textiles, meaning things people could still wear or still use, but it also includes scrap textiles. And textiles are a big component of the tonnage in waste. That's just one example. I go to another municipality to recycle all of my plastic film because that's not recyclable in Durham. As a matter of fact, you know, some of us have talked about doing, you know, kind of a taxi service, you know, to collect things from other people, because those of us who really want to maximize our diversion, we're going to make sure that we're able to do that. And if we can't do it in Durham, we're going to do it somewhere else. Now, citizens have tried to raise the issue of clear garbage bags at the region a couple of times, and the region's response has been, I mean, they're just allergic to even talking about this. And what the clear garbage bag does, and why Markham started it when they did, they said to their residents, we're sending our waste to another community for it to be burned. We have an obligation to that community to make sure that we are, we're not sending anything hazardous. And of course, Markham also wants to maximize their diversion. And I don't have the 2018 numbers, but in 2017, they were one of the municipalities with the highest diversion rate. So there is a lot of very low-cost things that Durham could do. What I'm concerned about is that Durham is focusing on some of the very high-cost approaches, like their mixed waste presort, which they want to combine with the organics. So just because the question was asked, and because it's really important you understand the potential. So Durham staff claim that the mixed waste presort will get out those organics that are in the garbage bag that people haven't sorted. At single family and townhomes, you have green bin collection, but there's no organics collection in high density multi-residential buildings. So these people aren't even offered the opportunity to divert the organics. So this mixed waste presort is going to attempt to extract the organics from mixed waste. So just picture what you put in your last garbage bag. And because we're all recycling the maximum, there's probably going to be very little in our garbage bags that would be extractable, because we probably, all of us, have green bin collection. So they're going to attempt to extract those organics. The percentage of how much they can extract is in question, and the quality of those organics is they're going to be highly contaminated. That is why they would need AD processing. The region's green bin is clean, and it's composted, and it could be composted for a very long time, and we could expand organics collection to multi-res. It's not easy, but it can be done, and Toronto's trying to do it. So I think the mixed waste presort is going to produce very mixed results at very high cost. And in the preliminary business case, which, by the way, was never provided to Durham Region councillors in 2017 when staff brought the report forward, there's a real question as to whether or not those dirty organics, what that end material is going to be like. Will it be marketable? So there's just huge questions in terms of how effective it might be.
Was it your opinion that the clear bag program in Markham was working?
Markham statistics bear out that it's working. You know, will every single person do it right every time? No. The principle is the collector has X amount of time at each stop to take a look at that clear bag. For sure you can see what's in a clear bag better than what's in a black or green garbage bag. And Markham's diversion statistics have borne it out. They had an increase in organics collected and fewer recyclables in the garbage bags. And by heavily promoting their textile program at the same time, they got a lot of the textiles out of waste. But their priority was also to get the haz waste out. You know, and on this front, there's a real problem with the incinerator, because when you read the annual report, we found, and one of your staff members was at that meeting when we were dealing with that annual report. So Durham supposedly has a screening that takes place at the transfer stations. You know, they dump the loads and they take a look at it. And we would always question, well, like, how are you finding those batteries or thermometers or other smaller electronics that are hazardous? How are you finding that in a big pile of waste dumped on the floor? And Durham staff assured us, you know, that everything was great. So in that 2017 annual report, well, guess what got through their screening process? A hot dog, and more than one. So, you know, it's really, there have been assurances provided to Clarington and to Durham Region Council that have not been delved into enough to get to the bottom of things.
So I understand that the region had a report following that little waste tour that the clear bag program in Markham wasn't working. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, they had a report, and it actually, I wondered if we were at the same meeting, to be honest, okay? Okay, so just to give you some background, I had set up a meeting with Markham, and I just happened to mention it when I was at Regional Council. That's never gonna happen again. And I invited, Mark was a reporter at the time, and I invited Mark to come along. And then all of a sudden, Markham said, Durham staff are gonna join that meeting. Do you have any objection? And I'm thinking, the only answer to that is no, right? And, you know, if there was a negative they didn't focus on the success of the program. The metrics confirmed the program was a success. And then there were all kinds of stories after that meeting, okay, that Durham had sent staff around to take a look at the Markham bags, and they pointed out everything that the collector forgot to either take or leave, you know, whatever it was. Durham staff don't want to do clear bags. You know what clear bags take? They take source separation at home, which is cheap, which we can all do, okay? And you have to make a decision. Are you gonna pay your collectors, you know, to stay at the stop for an extra 2 to 5 seconds so they can actually take a look at the bag and put a tag on it? And Markham even had their collectors reporting to them, you know, what types of issues they were encountering. This is not hard. And Durham did a pilot, and I believe it was in Curtis. One of the routes was in Curtis, and I think one was in Pickering. And it was a success, you know, and it could be improved upon. But you get a bunch of engineers, and they're going to want a mechanical solution. And this is unfortunately the direction the region is going. And the long-term waste management plan review could provide a huge opportunity to everybody, like the entire region. I kind of feel sorry for new regional councillors because, like, they go to a meeting on January 16th and look at this report and say, oh, my God.
Ms. Gasser, we really need you to focus on the questions.
Yeah. So it would be of huge benefit.
Okay. Do you have anything further? Ms. Gasser, thank you. Councillor Neal, I think you've got a motion.
I'll need a seconder. So moved that the delegations of Wendy Bracken and Linda Gasser be referred to staff to report back at the January 28th, 2019 planning meeting on a draft resolution in response to the region's COW report on the EFW, including the proposed administrative amendment to increase the maximum annual tonnage under the ECA to 160,000 tons.
Seconded by Councillor Trail. Questions, comments? So I'm going to look to staff to see, if this is doable. I'm thinking the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. I think that planning staff are already working on something along those lines.
Okay. And Amy, there were a series of questions that that you had of staff. Councillor Anderson and Neil and myself had them for the region. Probably good to distribute them to the local councillors as well. Do you have any confidence you're going to get answers to those things prior to your report? I'm seeing Ms. Langmaid shaking her head. No, okay, that'll be part of it. Mr. Allison, one of the questions that came forward was reviewing the host community agreement, our obligations and the region's obligations. Councillor Neal, I assume that you would like that included as part of this?
Well, if we have to receive legal advice, then I guess but some reference obviously will have to be included.
I think Mr. McIver and Mr. Allison are probably capable of taking a look at the HCA and
sure.
Am I being overly optimistic, Mr. Allison, in that statement?
No, you're not being overly optimistic.
Good answer, thank you. Okay, with that, I'll call the question. All in support? Opposed? Carried? Probably good time for a 10-minute break. Councillor Neal, seconded by Councillor Hooper. All in support? Opposed? That is carried, thank you. Okay, folks, if we can call the meeting back to order. Thank you. All right, so we're under Section 8, which is the communications for information. We've got the Tyrone minutes and MPAC. If I could have a motion on the Tyrone minutes. Councillor Trail, thank you. Seconded by Councillor Anderson. That's to receive. Questions, comments? Call the question. All in support? Opposed? Carried on MPAC. And the year-end report, Councillor Hooper. Seconded by Councillor Jones. Questions or comments? Councillor Neal.
Through the chair, so is this 82.6 residential assessment? Seems to me that's lower than what it was in the past. Are there any trends here? I always thought the residential was about 90%, so maybe am I missing something here? I just recall that seems to be lower than what I thought our residential assessment was, but by class.
I think it's pretty consistent. I don't know if Mr. Pinn is the guy to answer, or if he's going to have to get back to you on that.
Through the chair, I can look into a trend as far as the mix for the last number of years and report back to council on that. It's pretty consistent, I believe, give or take the odd percent. Some of that also may have to do with market increases. The market for commercial property may be going up higher than some of the other residential. But I can take a look into that.
Councillor Neal.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And through you to Mr. Pinn, what's happening with the appeals? Because there's a lot of big box store appeals. How is that affecting our assessment right now, commercial assessment?
Through the chair, MPAC this year did take into account some of the items in which that they've had agreement with the appellants, and they have adjusted their assessment in certain areas. The appeals, for the most part, are not complete, but there has been some agreement on certain factors, and MPAC does try to take that into account so that there's not a huge shock. There was some properties that saw a decrease in our commercial property because of these ongoing appeals, but they are not complete yet.
So through the chair, have we seen an impact from that yet or not on our commercial assessment?
Through the chair, we have seen an impact, yes.
And through the chair, can you quantify what that means in terms of lost tax dollars in absolute numbers or not? I'm just trying to get a sense of the magnitude of the issue for us, that's all.
Through
the
chair.
Is there a big hole to fill, or is it really not that significant?
Through the chair, I can get that. I don't have those numbers with me right now, but I can get that and report back to council.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hooper.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and through you to Mr. Pinn. In the report on where it says conclusions, I just highlighted something. Who is involved on the municipal and stakeholders relation team?
Through your worship, there's a number of MPAC staff. Carla Nell is the vice president. Each region, the province is broken into regions, so each region has a regional manager. Our rep is Mike Porporo, so he is our municipal relations person locally for Clarington.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, do we have anything further? Mr. Pinn, I'll pick on you because you've been talking. We've got in advance of the detailed stuff on Clarington, lots of numbers about how wonderfully MPAC is doing. Is there anything you'd like to see them do better, and should committee slash council be forwarding a request of them to do something differently or better in your view?
Through the chair, it's kind of a loaded question. At this point, I don't see anything critical that council would need to make a request to MPAC. MPAC is aware of some concerns that staff have regarding how they classify and how they treat commercial properties in Clarington. We are compared to Eastern Ontario and not necessarily the GTA. So there's some rates that they use that are more likely applicable in Kingston and Peterborough than in Durham Region. They are aware of that and are considering that in their next assessment round.
All righty, thank you. With that, on the motion to receive, I'll call the question. All in support? Opposed? That is carried. The next is 9.1, Durham Region. This is regarding GO Rail Services Extension. Are you moving that, Councillor Anderson, and seconding it, Councillor Neal? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, questions or comments? Councillor Neal.
Well, I guess I was, there was a big story in the paper about the new business case analysis. Is there any sense of, from to you, Mr. Chair, from your various discussions and so on, how is that gonna change what the previous government had announced? I guess, short question.
It could be a very long answer. So I'm gonna flip it to Mr. Allison first, and then I'll add some observations that I've had over the past week with some dialogue. Mr. Allison, you and I were just talking about this.
At the break, I was just indicating to His Worship that staff will be preparing, for the benefit of all members of council, a summary of the various initiatives that are ongoing with respect to that portfolio. In terms of, I think you're probably referring to the Clarington This Week article that quoted Councillor Park, or sorry, excuse me, MPP Park, and the business case going forward. We had a meeting on Friday afternoon with the four Durham MPPs, Lauren Coe, Rod Phillips, Peter Bethet, I can't pronounce his last name, he's the president of the Treasury Board, I apologize to him. Thank you. And Lindsay Park. And we raised the first issue that was put on the table by the mayors, Mayor Carter, Mayor Mitchell, and Mayor Foster, was the GO Train extension. The discussion quickly morphed into the business case, and what we offered up, or what we asked, was what can we do at the local level to ensure the project goes forward. We believe we have private sector interests at the local level that will not give any reason to delay the project, the extension of the GO Train services. We are, I'll say, doing a full court press, trying to stay on top of that issue and find out what that business case means, what they're looking for. We are meeting with Metrolinx's staff, senior staff, to try and put meat on that skeleton, determine what exactly they are looking for. The commitment that they made, I think, probably was reflected in the newspaper article from Clarington This Week, and that is that the Conservatives want to see the project go ahead. They are looking at a bit of a different model, but frankly, it's not one that should result in any delays in terms of the extension out our way, certainly not in terms of what might be required for the Curtis or Bowmanville GO Station expansions. We know we have private interests that will be knocking down the doors to participate in whatever business model they want to have going forward. That's a long answer. The short answer is we are continuing to have discussions with all of the MPPs, local MPPs. We are meeting with Metrolinx staff. We're doing everything we can to try and stay on top of that issue and make sure that there's no reason to delay the implementation of that extension, which under the previous government was anticipated to be 2024. We are still very much looking forward to seeing that commitment realized by the Conservative government.
Thank you.
Okay, so to add to, I had the opportunity to speak with Minister Ethan Falvey, as well as Minister Fedeli on Thursday evening. That was obviously the top part of dialogue. Again, we did see them on Friday. Had an opportunity to sit with, and MPP Park was available both Thursday, Friday. I saw her and MPP. My mind just went Pacini, thank you, completely blank for a moment there. Not a surprise to any of you. Again, the GO train front and center. The province, we do have indication from private enterprise that they are quite prepared to step up and do something around a P3, 3P, however you choose to describe those. We've got to decide what the appropriate steps are next, but we, I think, need to show the commitment of local business as well. We'll reinforce that the four Durham MPPs are firmly behind it. The statement that has repeatedly been made is that this government is all about fulfilling their promises, and that likely, and we are pushing for something from either the Premier or the Minister, that part of the problem in getting a statement out is, in fact, this change in the way that they are doing business. So lots of ongoing dialogue. Staff working very closely with Oshawa, and we have a far more enthusiastic crew at Durham Region than we did a couple of years ago. Have been doing a lot of work on it as well. Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, and I know it's a project that took a lot of work and the community put a lot of work into it, and I don't know what, there was $550 million that was turned over to Metrolink for the project. I know this government have a different model and a different approach. So one of the suggestions would be we start to engage the private sector more, and we had a committee going at the beginning, as you know, Adrian, that had struck with private sector involvement, and they came to the table and they paid for the business case, et cetera. So I'm sure the private sector will be willing to step up and whatever this government have in mind, have a real partnership. So, but we need someone to spearhead that, and I guess that's a discussion we'll have to have later on around that anyhow.
So that's exactly the discussion that's happening right now, Councillor. You're right.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further? Just before we take the vote on that, as a matter of interest, if you drive down Curtis Road, the Kiss and Ride is in fact open and operating. I've got to tell you, I was a little bit surprised. It would have been nice if GO had announced that. It's not being particularly well used, but if nobody knows that they opened it and finished it, you know, this is the first significant investment they've made in Clarington in a long time. I was a bit shocked, happy, very happy, but a little bit shocked. So on the motion to receive, I'll call the question. All in support, endorse. Yeah, you're correct. All in support, opposed. That is carried. The next is the Bowmanville BIA. Madam Clerk, the letter is written as, you're looking for a motion for direction. The letter is written as a for your information. Let's just, or endorse it. We may need to endorse the names. Okay.
They tell us who it is and then we
perfect. So endorse is fine. Endorse the identified individuals. Okay, appoint. Okay, so receive with thanks and appoint the individuals. Councillor Neal? Okay, seconded by Councillor Hooper. Questions or comments? Councillor Hooper.
The only comment I have is that they took me off as a director and now put me as Councillor Liaison, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
change that. All right. Anything further? Call the question. All in support? Opposed? That is carried. Thank you. The next is Mr. Francis Tufts. Councillor Schwartz, you have a motion.
I do. I don't have a seconder. You guys all have a copy of the motion? I don't need to read it then, do I?
I think everyone's had an opportunity to see it, and I don't think there's anything particularly controversial in it.
So I do want to speak to it.
Members of committee, I don't think anyone needs you to read it.
Okay.
Okay, any questions or comments on that? For the sake of the audio, Madam Clerk, how would you like to read it? Got you off the hook. Just so that
mind,
it's on.
I don't
on
mind
the,
reading it.
That's okay. We'll get the clerk to do that. And just so that anyone listening to the tape understands what we're doing.
Whereas with inadequate public transit, people in the rural northern area of Clarington are deprived of the opportunity to pursue social and economic opportunities. And whereas the current public transit routes and schedule result in a lengthy trip to go a short distance, often requiring many transfers. And whereas the routes are not fully integrated with other regions in close proximity to Clarington, now therefore be it resolved that Metrolinx and the GO Transit Commission be requested to expand GO Transit services to include stops in Orono on the buses traveling between the GO parking lot at Highway 2 and Highway 115 and Peterborough, known as the 88. And that the region of Durham be requested to expand the Durham Transit services to include routes and schedules to enable citizens in rural Clarington to travel in a safe, accessible, and timely manner.
Councillor Hooper.
I just have one comment and question, whatever. I agree with the resolution. I thought that in the past that we used to have a bus that sort of traveled through the rural component, like it started in Orono, went up through to Enniskillen and out through Hampton and places like that. And I just wondered if that was still in operation, or was that one of those things that they decided was not being well used and cut that from the service? Or and I don't know whether Councillor Zort would know anything about that or not, or maybe even staff, probably engineering would probably know.
So Councillor Zort, the Orono perspective.
I'm not aware of a bus going to Enniskillen. I know there was a school bus run that went through Orono and Kendall and Newtonville and
Tyrone was what I meant to say, not Enniskillen. Sorry.
Okay, I'm not aware of that. But the school bus run has been stopped in Durham Region. The only bus now that we get in Orono is the Durham Region bus. It comes once a day. If you're elderly and have a doctor's appointment in Bowmanville, you have to get on that bus at 9:30. It comes back at 4:30. You're stuck in Bowmanville or Newcastle all day long. It's not, you know, if you can't take it to work for a 9-to-5 job, it's better than nothing almost. this 88 bus goes by the village 15 times a day. We're not asking that it stop at the village 15 times, but a few of those times I think would be helpful. And then you can get to the Kiss and to the parking lot at the Highway 2 and 115, and then you can go, you know, you can go to Pearson, you can go anywhere, right? It connects you to the world. So,
totally agree with you. Thank you.
Councillor, I think Mr. Cannell has something. I think it's been two or three years since that route was changed. Mr. Cannella, I can't really see you, but I understand you were trying to get my attention.
There is still an existing route that's being taken, and I do think it connects with the retirement home at the lakefront. But I don't know of any sort of changes or anything sort of beyond that point. The only change we're working with is through DRT and improvements to the village, and the existing GO bus route. It's about all that's really happening at our end.
All right, thank you. Anything further on that?
Just a quick comment. Yeah, I think it's something that's really needed, especially through the chair. Those kids are now, they're deprived of an opportunity to even go to the youth center in Newcastle. So it would be nice if there was some forms of transportation, whether it's school buses or whatever, that would facilitate that. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. So, you know, in our dialogue, and I think, Councillor Neal, you're looking at having DRT come out and chat with us. Part of the problem, of course, is ridership. You know, the number of people that use the buses and the costs associated with it, and a broader discussion is that, you know, generally in Clarington, because of ridership, the buses run on loops. If you're on the wrong end of a loop, you know, what is a 5 or a 10 minute drive can be an hour bus ride. So I can't speak for any of the other councillors, but again, during the campaign, heard about that frequently, that, you know, using the bus was not the most convenient. So dialogue to have, see if there are different ways of doing it, acknowledging that ridership is a challenge.
Can I have a recorded vote on this?
I have a prediction, but yes.
On the item regarding the GO train service, moved by Councillor Swart and seconded by Councillor Anderson. Beginning with Councillor Swart.
Yes.
Councillor Anderson?
Yes.
Councillor Hooper?
Yes.
Councillor Jones?
Yes.
Councillor Neal?
Yes.
Councillor Trail?
Yes.
Mayor Foster?
Yes. I don't think it's going to take the clerk a really long time to tabulate those results.
Pretty cold today.
Thank you. So the next is community services. Councillor Trail.
I don't have, oh, run. So moving so quickly today. Awesome. My new department. All right, so my inaugural role as the liaison for community services. We have one report today. Dealing with the Curtis Youth Center, it is the Pilot Youth Center Curtis Project, CSD-001-19. Do I have a mover, please? Moved by Mayor Foster, seconded by? We have Councillor Anderson. Questions or comments to the report? Mayor Foster.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to take the opportunity again to express our thanks to staff, as well as the John Howard Society. So very limited amount of time, limited funds, and, you know, looking at Curtis and the ribbon cutting, the Argosy unveiling the other day in Newcastle. Thank you for all that you've done.
Great. Councillor Neal.
Well, I just want to, I think, again, then Citizen Jones started the whole ball rolling with the presentation that she made to this council and prior to the election. So I don't think that should be sort of forgotten. And now she's sitting here at the council table, but I think it's an indication of what, you know, when you someone gets involved in the community and then brings it forth to council, that good things can happen. So it's nothing but a positive note. And I was really happy to see Mr. Cruz here this morning. He's principal at a school, actually the school that my three children attended for their primary education. And I think he's a great asset for the community. And I do recall attending an election forum at his school, and Councillor Mayor Foster was there. Then again, Citizen Jones and myself and a few other the other candidates, and that was a fun day. But I think the this is going to hopefully just become a bigger thing in the Curtis community. And to Mr. Caruana, I think your staff did a great job getting that up and running. And I guess now you're handing it off to the in a sense. Well, I guess that's already happened. But anyway, I just think it's a good news story in Curtis and Newcastle, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments to the report? Being none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? All those opposed? And that is carried. Any other questions or comments to the Director of Community Services? Great. That concludes this portion of the agenda. Thank you. Oh, Councilor Hooper.
I just have one. I'd just like to say thank you to staff for, we had some issues in regards to a couple of things, and I just want to say thank you very much for how it's been handled. Thank you.
Councilor Neal.
Well, just had an interesting discussion on Friday about the challenges with lifeguards. I don't know, is there any...